The Mary Griffith Show is underway. Wait a minute. Make a correction right off the bat. This is not the Mary Griffith Show. It is the Jack Freiberg and Chuck Schultz Show, which takes over one day a month for the Mary Griffith Show. Mary Griffith is just a puppet here to push buttons for them. No, Jack, sit over here. I still have to see you, baby. You can move your headphones. Just, no, come over and sit in your regular chair.
All right.
You'll have room. You should have room.
Yeah,
I hope. Okay. Oh, my goodness. So I still am needed somewhat to boss them around a little bit, but only until we get them introduced. So joining me today by the in-person with headphones on, because he has to hear our guest on the phone, is Jack Freiberg. And joining me via the phone lines, good morning, Mr. Chuck Schultz.
Good morning, Mary. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Chuck.
I'm coming live and direct from beautiful Decatur Red Tail Run Golf Course, where the Quincy Notre Dame Lady Raiders are getting ready to tee it up in the state championship. And Becky and I'll be over here walking along, watching our granddaughter Nancy, who's a freshman. And we got a great group of girls here and a wonderful coach. It's just exciting for them to make the state tournament. So you're going to have to fly solo, Jack, or Mary, you know, do what you can.
Well, I'll try to keep him under control, but you mentioned the state tournament. Good luck to those Lady Raiders. Not
Thank
just
you.
Nancy
the,
Schultz, but everybody on the
over
team.
Over at Bloomington, I
Good.
Think,
Fantastic.
At the D.A. Wybring course.
Okay, Chuck, before we have to let you go, because Jack's prepared to kind of go solo on this, so I want to get just your thoughts. I received a copy of the ruler, and we're going to talk about a lot of things, but I know this ruler has been something that you have wanted to do, to have 12 inches of history given to every whatever grade level you've chosen. And it was
every school child in Adams County will get one. 10,000.
Every child. 10,000 rulers.
Every public school, private school, whether you go to school at Mendon, Liberty, Pace, Camp Point, Quincy. I wanted each school child that was, you know, being educated during our 200th anniversary celebration with the bicentennial to get something about the history of Adams County. So one of our first tasks was to define a timeline from 1825 to 2025. And I thought, you know, you could hand that to a school kid. Some might be interested enough to read it and take it home even. But let's face it, most of them wouldn't last the day they got it. But if you print it on a 12-inch wood ruler, they're going to keep it forever. They'll find that thing 50 years from now at our 250th celebration. Say, oh, yeah.
I'd see it at a lot of auctions 50 years out.
Yeah, wooden rulers, wooden rulers are,
you would know.
They are collector's items. They are collector's items.
I have to commend Jack. He's chairman of the education committee, and they worked so hard on this, Mary, and fine-tuned. I mean, you wouldn't believe it would take that long, but it's been like a year's effort. And it really is going to be a great keepsake from the bicentennial. So in addition to all the school kids, hopefully we'll have some to give out to the public as well.
Okay, that is great. Now, I want to add, before I let you go, because I know you got your mind on other things, and Becky's probably tugging at you already, but I want to ask you, how difficult was it to hone this down? Because trying to find just enough 12 inches worth of history is difficult, right?
It was impossible, and we kept trying and trying, and we're working. You know, this is all made possible, I should point out, by Refreshment Services Pepsi. And so they have a great graphics department, and Scott down there kept telling us, you know, it's got to be, you just got to, we started out, Jack, what with, we thought we could maybe get it in the 30s. But, you know, it's got to be legible. So here's our saving grace, Mary, is so we had to eliminate a lot of stuff. I wanted each of the presidential visits on there, and we had to eliminate those. But we're gonna, that's the ruler. We're going to have two other timelines. One will be on a big wraparound sign that will put them on the back of a semi and take it to the Clayton Old Settlers and Liberty Fall Festival and German Fest or whatever. And then the other one is going to be a permanent memorial on the lawn of the Adams County Courthouse. And that's a great big, you know, we're talking like granite. So we really don't have a limitation on that. We could do several lines. We could do it any way we want. So with that, it'll be much more extensive. We'll put on there that Teddy Roosevelt did visit in 1903. And we're also going to put the 13 incorporated municipalities and their dates of incorporation, so, you know, to recognize the entire county and every town in it.
Okay. Well, Chuck, you've done a great job, and we wish you and the Lady Raiders and the Boy Raiders all the best, and anybody who's participating in postseason play around the tri-states, good sportsmanship is what it's all about. Thank you so very much, Chuck Schultz.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks.
Thank
good
you.
Good luck, Jack.
See you, Chuck.
Take care.
Okay, Jack. You got rid of that guy. Now it's all the Jack Freiberg Show.
I'm not sure I'm ready for this. We'll make it work.
Definitely you will make it work. Jack, being in charge of the education component of this, the bicentennial next year, it's going to kick off in January. It's going to run all year long. On July 25th, WTAD has its 100th birthday, and we're already planning a celebration. And you'll, of course, you and Chuck will have to be part of that here at our studios. We're already beginning to start thinking about what that's going to look like. But it is difficult to encapsulate everything important that happened because everything's important to somebody for some reason. But when you do have to start thinking about hitting the highlights, that's when it gets tough. But you guys have done a good job. And the great thing about it is, because you have so much room on the lawn of the courthouse, things that didn't make it on this 12-inch ruler can make it in that format, too.
Our first quest was to get this ruler put behind us, because obviously there's production time that's involved in that. But we go from the 30 items here to possibly as many as 300 items on the courthouse lawn granite memorial. So we started out with over 600 items. We had feedback, and Justin Coffey and Reggie Ankrum, thanks for putting those lists together that we drew the initial information from. But the list is really a compilation of local events, for instance, Snap-Eyed Manufacturing being formed in 1848, to really world events like Colonel Paul Tibbetts dropping the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. So we kid about this all roads lead to Quincy stuff all the time, but the reality of it all is there have been a lot of events that have really not only affected locally, but also affected the world. Because in my eyes, what Colonel Tibbetts did saved hundreds of thousands of American boys' lives.
I wouldn't be here today. My dad has told me, he didn't talk hardly ever, ever, ever about the war. But when I asked him about that horrible bombing, because, you know, for a kid, that's just horrifying, you know, that we, the nice Americans, would do that. My dad just said, well, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be here, because we would have probably sustained as many as 1 million losses in trying to take the island of Japan. And my dad was there on the line waiting in the Navy ship waiting to go aboard. So it's amazing how you think the action of one man from Quincy, Illinois, saved the world.
There's no doubt about it. And in his later years, Colonel Tibbetts got a lot of feedback, primarily from younger people, that would say to them, how could you drop that bomb and kill all those people? And Colonel Tibbetts' response to that was very simple. I never thought one moment about the Japanese people I killed. I thought about the American boys that I saved.
And that kind of encapsulates the whole thing. Jack Freiberg, my guest today on The Jack Freiberg Show.
With Mary Griffith.
With Mary Griffith pushing the button. Because, you know, I mean, Jack and Chuck are never going to learn how to do that. So, you know, that's all I got to say about that.
That's your saving grace,
Mary. That's the only reason I'm still here, is because I know how to push a button. Let's talk a little bit, too, about the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. One of the reasons that we're able to have these timelines and this book, we got to talk about the book, and we've had all these gathering sessions at the local libraries in Camp Point and Clayton and everything. One of the reasons we have these things is because people care about history, and there's historical societies in every little town, and then there's one, you know, Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County, and that makes a big difference. Talk about the importance of an organized historical society, because you can have something in your basement, but it's nice to have a public enclave, isn't it?
Well, first of all, a lot of people don't realize, but this is the Historical Society's 128th year. And
they were here before history was.
And guess who the first president of the Historical Society was, Mary?
I bet you're going to tell me, and I bet it's going to have a tie to you.
How about Lorenzo Bull?
Oh, okay. Not a Freiburg. I'm kind of surprised. But you're right, Lorenzo Bull. I kind of knew that in the back of my mind.
Because Lorenzo Bull was president of the first Historical Society when the library across the street was built. It was designed by the firm of Patton and Fisher and was completed in 1888. Well, Bull... I'm not sure where he was on the library board, but when they dedicated the library, guess who the featured speaker was? Lorenzo Bull. And he liked that building so much, he designed his bank right down the street at 2428 Main. He hired the same architects to build the Granite Bank.
Yeah,
exactly. And that was completed in 1992. So it really, in that period of time, it's like all roads lead to Lorenzo Bull.
And that is critically important. And, of course, his home stands today thanks to the preservation of the Quincy Park District and a private group called the Friends of the Lorenzo Bull Home. And tomorrow you can go sit on the lawn and enjoy things there. It what they're calling Quincy's Front Yard now, which I like that appellation for that home there at 16th and Main. The Historical Society is doing something this month to raise funds, and it's a lot of fun. They usually are sold out. Do we even know if we have tickets available for tomorrow night's showing?
Tomorrow's night is sold out.
Yeah, I thought so.
And I'm going to be a featured player tonight. I'm going to be my good friend and hunting mentor, Allie Limonstall, tomorrow night. So I am really looking forward to that. Speech is written. Everything's ready to go. Let me talk a little bit about a couple of things that distinguished Allie. First of all, he grew up, he had a dad who was a big outdoorsman like he was. And he grew up in an era when there you could use live decoys. So a lot of things have changed since the time that he was a boy. And they would keep these live decoys in a crate, and they would allow the ducks all to keep their heads out of it, because if you kept them contained, they would all quack like crazy, and you could hardly stand the noise because they were excited and what have you. So you had all these ducks with their heads outside of the crate looking every which direction. And they would tether the live decoys and then put a weight on them so they could fly a little bit. They could flash bosh off the water, but they couldn't take off. Well, then when the wild ducks showed up, they had usually one or two or three of little hen mallards that were in a crate in the blind, and when they saw the wild ducks fly up, they would throw this French calling hen up, and she would fly around and make a loop and call like crazy and then land in with those live decoys. Well, all the wild decoys just swooped in given that set of circumstances. And it's a totally different time and a totally different kind of rig than the way we have it now. Another story that Allie liked to tell was he was back from World War II, and he hunted in a blind in Pike County, fairly close to East Hannibal. And he was in his duck blind early morning, and he's looking on the Missouri side, And he said, "What is that over there?" I can't. And then he finally realized it was a wild deer. It was the first time that he had seen a deer in his entire life. He had to be in about in his mid-20s then, because he was a veteran of the war. But look how things have changed since Allie seeing his deer in about 1945, 46, to where we are with the deer today. Things have changed.
And that just goes to show that conservation management can make this all happen. Are you going down to draw for a duck blind tomorrow in Pittsfield? They're registering at 10, drawing at noon?
No.
You've got your own place.
I've got a private place that's been in my family since 1941, so I'm kind of spoiled. Now, will the guys I hunt with in over near Meridosha go? Sure they will.
Absolutely. Everybody wants to get that blind draw. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, so much to talk about on the Jack Freiberg Show.
With Mary Griffith.
With Mary Griffith's sidekick. And we'll head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative, make some money so I can get paid. Jack doesn't get paid, but at least I want to get paid. So I'm going to head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative and find out what the farm markets are doing. But right now, if you'd like to have an exciting career in radio, listen up, Jack, to this next ad. We have openings. So if you'd like to be Mary Griffith Jr., you know, I can't be here forever, folks. And somebody's going to have to take my place. I've worked here since I'm 28 years old. I want the new Mary Griffith Jr., boy or girl, to come and get a job. I'll train you. I'll teach you how to do it right, and you'll have an exciting career. Listen up. We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD, 20 minutes away from Fox News at the top of the hour. Always a joy when the Jack Freiberg Show is on, featuring his sidekick, Mary Griffith. He just told great stories about Allie Limonstall. You know, Jack, we were talking off the air, and people say, how do you know all this? How do you know all this? Because you educate yourself. And tonight, you're going to a special event. It's already... I don't think you can get tickets, but you might go standby. You know, you never know. If somebody doesn't show up, they might have a meal for you. Or maybe you can go and just make a donation and not eat. But it's at the Country Club. But talk a little bit about the guest that's coming in tonight. It's a fundraiser for the Quincy Museum. But more than that, it's a chance for people who are history buffs to learn from the horse's mouth about spying.
Yes, this is put on by the Quincy Museum. And I like to support anything that has to do with history, whether it be the Historical Society or the Quincy Museum. My roots on that go way back to me being in the Explorer Post and being one of the tour guides from the Arike Indian Museum way back when Jim Reed and Doc Snow and those people were involved. But tonight, Colonel Frank Furr is going to be talking about his days as a U-2 pilot, which was made internationally famous when Francis Gary Powers was shot down by the Russians back in the late 50s, if my memory serves me right. So this should be a really great program to listen to. Again, I think the tickets have closed for this, but I am really excited about hearing this story. Because Colonel Furr not only was a pilot, he also was in charge of all the information that came through there, where he had a desk job and the security that was involved in that. And what's interesting is, although this was 60 years ago, a lot of the information that he's going to be talking about tonight was just recently declassified.
That's the great thing. These people are alive still and can finally tell a story, because obviously the technology he used is now outdated, so he's not giving away any of those trade secrets. This stuff has all come to light after a certain amount of time, so it's great. Here's the, you know, again, we're so sorry that there's so much stuff going on tonight that attendance is not as high for this as it could be, but if you need something to do tonight, now again, don't tell him Mary Griffith said this was possible, but I guess I am. You're not going to get dinner because, you know, they've already ordered all the food. But if you just want to go to you know, tonight. I'd call the Quincy Museum and say, can I make a donation and just come and sit? You don't even need a table. You just sit in a chair. I'm sure they could find room for you, because this guy is indeed a heavyweight. Back to history, which this guy is talking about history. History is being made today somewhere in Adams County. We never know. But we need historians. And one of the things that is great, the bicentennial is, you know, again, it's just a year. It's just the 200th year. 2025 will be no more significant in some ways than 2024 or 2026. But we'd like to celebrate big bicentennial. So we're going to have this book about the first 200 years of Adams County. Pre-ordering this book is very beneficial for the Bicentennial Commission, and it's very important for individual people because they get guaranteed a book and guaranteed at a reduced price. Jack, they're still collecting artifacts for this book. They've had some real big successes in going around to the different libraries and asking people for stories, because stories are what make history come alive.
And Steve Belko has been going around to the various local libraries here and been getting information from local people in those areas. If you have a story that you would like to tell, please get something together and get it to the local library. I don't care if it's the one in Quincy or the one at Camp Point or wherever. In other words, we all have histories. And we all have individual items, the agricultural farms that are 150 years old. We are searching for a section for those kind of family farms that have been around that long. If you have anything that you think that would be of interest, please go ahead and submit it. Now, there. For your local country churches or your service clubs organizations, there is a fee, and that's scaled based on how large your individual story is.
But it's very reasonable.
If I remember right, I think a half page is $60.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
for permanently embossed in a book.
It's not going to be a killer. But the point being is Quincy and Adams County has a huge history, and you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but back up until 1825, Pike County went down from where Calhoun County is all the way up to the Wisconsin border, and at that time they went ahead and started dividing that up into smaller, more manageable units of government, and that's when Adams County was formed. And right after that was when the first school in Adams County was formed, and it's down in Fall Creek, and there is kind of a facsimile of that, because that school has been built and rebuilt, and like many of the frame structures that were built in the early 1820s, they are long gone, having been burned down, and sometimes having been burned down multiple times. But there are very few structures that go back to that. That's one of the things about the Eels House. The Eels House is 1835, and the beauty of it is knowing that it is a known Underground Railroad site, because the Eels case went first decided locally by our Supreme Court judge at that time, Stephen Douglas, against Eels, but then went on all the way to the Supreme Court. So we have number one, it's a blessing the building is still standing, but number two is we have unequivocal court records that attest to the fact that it was an Underground Railroad site.
You brought up the Eels House, and that sparked my memory. The Eels House, 1835, was rescued, put on landmark status. Right now, there is a movement. The Quincy City Council is being asked to give landmark status to St. Boniface Church. And I had somebody actually email me the other day and say, what makes that a landmark? In other words, it's only 60 years old.
Built in 62.
Built in 62. Jack, talk about that, because you see, something doesn't have to be incredibly old to be a landmark. It's the tallest building in Quincy when you count the spire. It is a unique architectural design
by John Benya,
who, again, I mean, I'm advocating for it. I'm going to just be honest. I think it's ridiculous not to placard it as a landmark. But something doesn't have to be 200 years old. If we're going to save things for them to become 200 years old, we have to preserve them. So what? Make an argument from a historian's point of view. Who gives a care? So what if it's a John Benya church? So what if it's unlike any other church in the United States? So what if it's the tallest spire in Quincy? So what if
on speaking in front of the city council on Monday about this very issue.
Okay, but you're only going to have 3 minutes, so you're going to get more time here. Why? Well, why should we do it?
First of all, it's a very historic church. It was founded in 1840, and my great-great-great-grandfather and my great-great-grandfather, one from Germany, the other from Warsaw, Poland, were founding members of that church in 1840. Up until that time, all that Quincy had was an itinerant priest whose territory went all the way from northern Michigan to southern Missouri. So needless to say, he didn't come by here very often. But they were founding members, and it was a German-speaking church at that time, primarily to serve the immigrants that had moved here. And my great-great-great-grandfather, Anton Delabar, was the first German family to come to Quincy and was a dedicated member of that church. My great-great-aunt, all right, was the first child baptized in that church. So my roots with St. Boniface go back very long. My grandfather was a member of that church, and my dad went to that school. So first of all, I think it's the history portion of it that is very important to that. Secondly, it's the architectural value of the building itself. Designed by John Benya, built in 1962, it's been named one of the 150 most important buildings in the state. We have one other building that's named on that list, and that is the John Wood Mansion. So there's architectural history that's involved in this. The Illinois Architects Association, I'm not sure what the exact name for it, though, has come here specifically to see that and the Wood Mansion. So it's of architectural significance in a huge way. And then the third thing is the Father Tolton connection, because Tolton was the first black Catholic priest in the United States, was really rejected by St. Boniface, but was embraced by Father McGeer from St. Peter's. He had the power, because it was originally began as, that church was originally begun as St. Lawrence, but he changed it to his namesake, St. Peter, and has been in St. Peter ever since. But he was the one that really endorsed Father Tolton going to Rome and began his story there. And as many of us know, he is on the road to sainthood, but that is something that could take God knows how many years with the Catholic Church. But the Catholic Church is also talking about preserving that, about holding on to that building.
Or tearing it down. These are options.
And hopefully making that a shrine for Father Tolton. But the Catholic Church does not want to have any of its options constricted, and immediately when you plaque it, that limits the options they may have. So they are against the placking because they don't want their hands tied up in any way, shape, or form.
While we say the bishop of the Springfield Diocese is adamantly against it, Catholics around here are adamantly for it. We're going to take a break. We come back. I just want to say this before we take the break, and then you can comment on this. You know, the reason nobody thinks St. Boniface is unique is because they've seen it every day of their lives. They don't realize go find another one. See, nobody goes out. When we built our new bridge, our new Bayview Bridge, now every bridge looks like that. That was the first to cross the Mississippi River with that design. Now every bridge looks like that. But you don't know something's unique because it's been in my backyard my whole life. So what could be so unusual about that? Go find another one.
But when you have something that's that unique, all right, it's easy to take it for granted.
Yeah.
And we should not.
We should not. We'll be back our remaining moments on the Jack Freiberg Show with his sidekick, Mary Griffith, in just a moment. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. The ever brilliant and insightful Jack Freiberg is my guest today. Jack, we've only got about 4 minutes left, and this bicentennial book is going to come out. People can order it. People can contribute to it. If there's something special about your family, you can buy an advertisement in it. It won't look like an advertisement. It'll just look like a page where you can say, my family invented this, or my parents did this, or my church is the oldest this, or we're the best this. You know, it's going to be full of factual information. It's going to be full of things that people think are important in Quincy history, in Adams County history. There is a website, and we don't tout it enough, but it's basically Adams County Bicentennial, right?
No, it's on the ruler.
It's on the ruler. It's Adams County, Adams CO 200. Adams CO, which stands for county, of course, AdamsCO200.org. I would suggest that you go to that to round out anything you need to know about the bicentennial celebration. Any final words of wisdom?
No, but if you've got any kind of unique incident, you know, in other words, something that a family member did, Civil War, World War One, anything, World War Two, any of that stuff is interesting. For instance, Allie Limonstall and his crew in the South Pacific shot down a wooden Japanese Mavis, which was a significant accomplishment because we were losing the war on August 28, 1943 when they shot down that Mavis. They found out 54 years later that Mavis was a plane full of bigwigs going to Rabaul to plan some invasions, and they found out that the guy that was one of the guys that was on there had just left being head of security of the Imperial Palace. It had a submarine commander. It had a couple of captains in the military, but they didn't find out who was on that plane until 54 years later, when we were at that point talking to the Japanese in such a way that we were trying to tell the whole story of the war. And Allie, for his entire life, would carry a picture of this Mavis smokescreen coming out of it on a diagonal right before it hit the water. And people would come up to him saying, showing this picture of their deer or their big fish they caught or turkey or what have you, and Allie would reach in his wallet and pull out that picture of that Mavis about smoking and about ready to hit the water, and he'd say, this is the trophy I'm most proud of.
That's a great story. Jack Freiberg, thank you for everything you do. The Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County has its Woodland Cemetery tours. They are sold out for tomorrow night, but they are doing one on Halloween night. And they're doing
and
one,
also a week from
and also a week from Saturday. So you have two more chances to go on the Historical Society tour. In fact, they're two separate tours, so you could actually go to both of them, but you must pre-register by calling 222-1835, 222-1835. All proceeds benefit the Historical Society.
One more thing. Mm-hmm. I just want to thank you to all our listeners out there. It's not a week that goes by that I am not stopped by someone who say to me, I really love your show. Keep doing what you're doing. Well, that's a huge feather and chuck in my cap, and I can't thank you enough for the feedback that I've received from you guys. Thank you so very much from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you for making the Mary Griffith Show, third Friday of the month, the most popular Mary Griffith Show. I must admit, it's a blow to my ego that the most popular guest on the Mary Griffith Show is not Mary Griffith, it's Jack Freiberg and Chuck Schultz. But you know what? I can live with that. And you know what? It just goes to show maybe you've got stories you want to tell. Folks, we want to hear them here. We love it. And so I've got a website, WTAD.com. I'm so bad at technology. WTAD.com. You can always contact me there. Hey, have a great weekend. I'll be at the Casa dinner tonight for charity, and I'll be at Motown tomorrow. Hope to see you around.